Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan and the Concord Group of Companies. Thanks to our friend David Dubé for getting on board and supporting football at the amateur level and this podcast. By Face First Medical Aesthetics on the second floor above Gabbo's on Dudney Avenue. Brotox is big with the men. Guys, you look after your body, but what about your face? Turn back the clock in a natural-looking way. Paul Waldo at Royal LePage in Regina. Give the three-time Grey Cup champ a call at 306-502-5355. Mark Greshner Photography. Check out his outstanding work at markgreshner.com. Award-winning photography. He's won every award you can win. Riviera Ag Seeds in Radville. Southern Saskatchewan's premium certified seed grower. Delivering homegrown certified durum, yellow peas, and chickpeas. SAS Selects Football, building the stars of tomorrow today. Out there at the Yar Center in Moose Jaw with their 7-on-7 flag football league. I was out there to watch it personally. It was outstanding the way it's run, and it's great to see the kids on the field playing football, some sort of football during this pandemic. Now, before we get to Where Are They Now, which is brought to you by our friends at Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn for grain hauling, grade marketing, and crop insurance, check out Corey Zadorozniak and the gang at Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. Today is National No Bra Day during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Today is meant to bring more attention to awareness. Charities like Bras for the Cause continue to have fun with the subject, and so does our spokeswoman, Chesty Punster.
October 13th is National No Bra Day. Yes, this day has had its ups and downs. Last year wasn't as successful due to sagging attendance and lack of support, but this year we're staying abreast on the subject. So even if there's a low turnout, we encourage you to stay perky, grab your breast friend, and say goodbye to your over-the-shoulder boulder holder. Unleash those sweater puppies and don't worry about being seen smuggling raisins, because this year we're doubling down. Set them free and celebrate No Bra Day, or as we call it during the pandemic, every day.
Time now for the Where Are They Now segment here on Growing the Game with Ballsy, and Where Are They Now is brought to you by Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn with Corey Zadorozniak for grain hauling, grain marketing, and crop insurance. Check out Corey out there in the Weyburn area at Double Z Ag Sales. I'm joined by a former Regina Ram great, former CFLer. He was the outstanding Canadian in the 2005 Grey Cup. He is Mike Maurer. Mike, how are you today, bud?
Not bad. How you doing?
Good, man. Still, you still look like you could play, man. You came and did some tree work for me in my backyard. You still look like you're twisted steel and sex appeal there.
Well, you know, the climbing the trees and throwing logs and throwing branches, it keeps you in a little bit of shape. You know, maybe I could, I might have to, I haven't run in a while, though. It's like riding a bike, though, I guess.
Yeah, so you were in the Canadian Armed Forces in the, 93, 94. I want to ask you this question right off the get-go. How do you feel about the issue, and it's dominated over the last couple of years, more so lately, how do you feel about people not standing for the anthem?
You know what, that's a good question, and I guess the way I look at it is everyone's got to do what they feel, you know, is right or what they believe in. If they believe in something enough and, you know, they're making a statement, whatever it is, you know, who am I to judge though, right? So, you know, if they're doing something that they believe in and they want to take a stand for something, you know, all the power to them. It's not my place to judge, I don't think.
Okay, so you you came to the Regina Rams and were, with the championship days, winning a couple of championships. What do you remember about your Ram days?
You know what? Back in the day, like the thing that I remember is the guys that I met, really. You know, like, yeah, we had a great squad, a winning squad, but we had such characters and lifelong friends and things like that. Just the experiences and the times that we had, you know, the memorable times. That's what I take. I walk away with it.
Yeah, you were picked by the Riders as a territorial exemption. They had that back then in the late 90s. What do you remember about 97 and that team? That was a team that actually, remarkably went to the Grey Cup.
That was a dream. You know, I was in camp in 96, so basically just for experience. And then when I was there in 97, I still had a year left at Rams. and they asked me to stay on, practice roster and things like that. I ended up playing about four games, but the thing that I remember is the some of the vets that we had were just, they treated me so well. Guys like Carl Coulter, Dan Rasevich, Darren Joseph, guys like that. And, we just had some really good characters. And you know what? That's the age-old saying, like, when a team gets hot, you know what I mean? I think it was Slack. It was Slack, and the offense got hot. And you know what? It was just, you got hot at the right time. And it was just it was a great ride. And, yeah, super memorable. I still remember it to this day.
Nobody was going to beat that Doug Flutie-led Argos team. I don't care.
It's unfortunate to say. Sometimes I think some of the guys were kind of happy to be there, but I think they knew they did everything they could.
Yeah.
And yeah, there was going to be no stopping Flutie.
Can you tell me about going to the BC Lions? I understand you were banged up. You ran, like, I heard a story, you ran into a pole in the park here and you ended up kind of limping into camp there. And then you turned yourself into a long snapper with the BC Lions. Tell me that story and if I'm on the right track with that story.
Oh yeah, that's a long story actually.
But we got time.
The gist of it is, I was cut five games in 2000 with the Riders, from Barrett and Shivers, and so was Giroto. Paul Giroto was a BC guy living with me. He got cut the day after, and if it wasn't for him, I thank him in my newspaper articles or whatever too, wherever I've been interviewed. He's the one, like, he kept me working out. He said, "Hey, we're gonna work out in the morning. We're gonna sprint in the afternoon. We're gonna teach ourselves how to long snap and then never get cut again." So this went on for about 4 or 5 weeks, and you know what? I didn't get on. I was working with Ranch Aero Society at the time and playing football with the kids, and I actually took on a permanent position with them. I kind of thought my career was over playing football, and I was running and I slipped near a tree, and it was actually a tree that my knee kind of hyperextended on. Anyway, sure enough, BC calls about the next day, I think. And, Dan Rasevich, I talked to Dan Rasevich, "Hey, man, what should I do?" I actually almost didn't go. I talked to Big Ivan Goodfriend, the trainer for the Riders for a long time. "Hey, I actually went into Riders camp, even though I had been a Riders facility, even though I had been cut, 6 weeks prior." He treated me, he helped me get some of that inflammation down and all that kind of stuff, and gave me some tips how to get through the physical. And yeah, I basically limped, but I had to suck it up and put on the best show. And that's that age old saying, fake it till you make it, right?
Yeah, but they said, who can long snap? And you didn't know how to long snap, but you did, and you faked it till you made it. Is that correct?
Kind of, yeah. So the rest of that year, I actually kept up. This was 2000. I kept up with my long snapping, and I would throw it against the wall. I would ask whoever to catch it for me after practice, but I was never on any kind of roster or depth chart. And then the following year, I think they had Reinson there. They had Roger Reinson in 2000.
Right.
And then the following year, Reinson was gone. They had Kralty doing it, Jason Kralt.
Yeah,
and it was about the third or fourth game of the season where he sent three or four over Kellett's head, and Matt Kellett was punting for BC at that time.
Right,
and I was at home, the birth of my daughter with my wife there in 2001, and a scheduled kind of day off or week off, and I had gone back, and the very next game, Carl did one more over Kellett's head, and Steve Barato, he was the head coach.
Yeah.
Came over to me in the sideline, so I wasn't on any kind of depth chart, had never done it in practice or a real game ever. And he said, "I saw you doing it in practice. Do you think you can do it in a game?" And I lied and I said, "Yep." And then I was out there. And you know what? The other thing that really helped me out too is Matt Kelly. Like, he was the punter, and he said, "Hey, we've been doing this, and we've been doing it after practice. I've seen you do it. I know you can do it. Just pretend like it's, it's practice, just me and you playing catch." And it was awesome. So it just went from there. And so I long snapped that year. I tied for leading the league in special teams tackles, and And
that's an amazing story. That's amazing, man. So you go to Ottawa with the Renegades in 2002 to 2004. What was it like playing in the nation's capital? Was it dysfunctional there then in Ottawa?
No, it wasn't. It was actually 2002, 2003, I want to say, they were great. The owners were great. They were really trying to run the organization like a first-class organization. It was really exciting to be part of something that was new and growing and trying to get it established. I mean, Ottawa's beautiful. More parks per capita than I think anywhere else in the country.
Lots of trees, right?
Yeah. people were great. You know, it's a big city with a small town feel. You know, people were really, it was just a really good experience, and we loved it. That was actually the first place we ever thought of kind of staying full time.
Interesting.
But then the you could see the wheels kind of falling off in 2004. All of a sudden, they just weren't running things the same way, and they were kind of holding things tight to their chest, and that's when I kind of decided, the wheels are falling off here. It's time to be a free agent.
Hey, in all of your time playing, Mike, and we'll get to the 2005 through 2009 with the Eskies, but in all of your time playing, Mike, who's your most interesting teammate? Maybe it was in high school. Maybe it was with the Rams. Maybe it was in the pros. Can you pinpoint one or two?
Oh, man, there's so many. And like I said, that's the best thing about football, is the locker room and the guys and the camaraderie and you know, those bonds and those lifelong friends that you make. There's a couple of guys that come to mind, though. Like I mentioned, Sergeant Jason Krault, who's a sergeant in the regular force army.
Wow.
You know, he was quite a character, like tough as nails, and just, you know, like I said, he's a sergeant in the army. Like, what else can you say? I mentioned Darren Joseph, a DJ. He could sing. I don't know what that song is by Bob Marley, but he can sing it like it's actually Bob Marley.
Really?
And he did that one time at a wind-up party, and, man, it was awesome. You know, we just had so many guys. And then you got guys like Kabongo, you know, the biggest man I've ever known, whatever he was, 6'6 and 375, like just a big booming voice and big booming laughter and jolly and fun, and, you know, there's all these guys, right? Like Josh Ronick, I still hang out with every once a year, you know, except this COVID year is kind of getting in the way of our yearly annual Maurer Ronick reunion. But, man, another great guy, just with some really good, wholesome values, even though he was called the little ball of hate.
Yeah.
So, it's just endless. It's just an endless a whole bunch of characters.
Hey, what was the song "I Shot the Sheriff"? Was that it?
No, it was. It's bugging me that I can't remember.
I'm just going through this. Is This Love? Sun Is Shining. There's One Love. Was that it?
Yes, One Love.
It is. Yeah, One Love. One Love. Interesting. That's good. DJ, I'd have to get him up one day and get him to sing that. No. That's awesome. Hey, it's Thanksgiving weekend, Mike Maurer. Which coach are you most thankful for during your time in football?
Well, it's hard to just kind of say just one. I mean, Jim Daly gave me my shot in with the Saskatchewan here as a territorial signing, like you said, calling a guy up from juniors. You know, he gave me a shot, and you know what, it was DiBrato that gave me a second shot in BC. When I went to BC, it was supposed to be just for one game. Sean Merrington was hurt or sick. It was just supposed to be for one game, and I almost didn't go. And then, you know, it turned into two games, and then it turned into the rest of the season. That ended up being a Grey Cup season with BC.
That's right.
And you know, that resurrected my career. So, you know, really thankful for that. And then 2005, you know, I know Danny Bachocha was only there for a couple of years, but he gave me a shot. He gave me opportunity, you know, things like that. So it's really hard not to kind of
Yeah.
You know, even those guys, you know, they're not in the list of the greatest coaches of all time, but you know what? They gave me opportunity and they treated me well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, those guys have longevity. Machocha's back in the CFL. Barato's been around a very long time. And Jim Daly was just a good guy all the way around. I don't know about him being a head coach, but he definitely knew his special teams and defense for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, talk about the 2005 Grey Cup game, a 38-35 thriller in overtime over Montreal at BC Place. And you were named top Canadian. Obviously, maybe I'm wrong, but I would say just looking at the stats, that's probably your most proudest moment in CFL.
It's up there. I mean, when you talk about memorable moments, my memory isn't so good these days, but things like that I'll never forget. The interesting thing about that is when I play my games, I was never a scoreboard watcher. You know, in those early days with the Riders in the late 90s, we were not very good. And you had to get really good at playing hard even when you had no chance of winning. The score, whether the score depicted that or whatever, right? So I turned into I just didn't look at the scoreboard and I played every play like it was 0-0, you know? Mm-hmm. And when we played that game and we won, it seemed like, I watched the game a few years after that. I never realized that the game was that close or that we were losing.
Really?
When I think of it in my memory, there was never any doubt of the outcome of the game. So when I was watching it again, it was like watching a completely different game.
So where does that let me stop you, Mike. Where does that mentality come from for you? You're a Canadian who's scraping by on the roster, okay? You're getting by on the roster, and you just said, well, I thought about playing. I thought about not going. I kind of faked it till I made it. Is that the mentality, though, you needed to have? And that's kind of, you were focused on the next play because, you know what, I was only supposed to long snap for one game. So you were very much living in the moment, and you took it to the extreme by the play.
Exactly. Because, you know what, every play, you're being watched, right? You know, the eye in the sky, that's what they talk about. You know, the film, you know, they got the wide angle, the tight angle. They're watching you from a couple different ways, and if you're taking plays off, or if you're not going hard, or if you're missing assignments, or I'm just gonna take it, I'm gonna take it easy this play, that's gonna get caught, right? So and your career is gonna be that much shorter. So yeah, I played it like one play at a time and 0-0, and I was just looking to win my one-on-one battle and help do whatever I could to help my team win. And yeah, you know what, I missed those guys. And like I said, the characters you come across are just amazing.
My son, I like to reference him because he just went through the amateur ranks here. He's down in North Dakota now playing. He was he was the go-to guy in RMF when I coached. He was the go-to guy in high school on both sides of the football. He called me actually just recently and said, "Hey, Dad, I'm right now on the depth chart as the starting on the punt block because I'm hitting all my gaps and I'm getting to the punter first. Obviously, I don't get a chance to block it," but he goes, "If I'm going to go to the next level eventually, I'm going to have to do it on special teams." So I try to transition this back to you, Mike Maurer. You were a stud with the Rams. You were always the go-to guy coming up through football. Was it a kind of a tough pill to swallow to only, really be a grunt guy, a long snapper, a special teams guy? You get into the 2005 Grey Cup after the starting fullback gets hurt. Was that a bitter pill for you to swallow not to be the guy when you were that guy all the way through?
It is and it isn't. You know what I mean? Like those guys, everyone's there and everyone has their path and everyone has come, basically been a stud in their own right, right, from wherever they come from. So it was a little bit, but you know what? Then you start to take pride and you take pride in those things and doing things to the best of your ability. And like you mentioned, your son hitting that gap and blocking that punt, like, you know, those are some things like you can take pride in. You know, there are guys that they make their careers on special teams, whether it's CFL, NFL, whatever. And, I'm happy to be one of those guys that was a blue collar guy, you know, winning that outstanding Canadian thing in 2005. All the reporters or whatever that talked to me after the game, they were like, they loved it. They were like, this is the first time like a blue collar, one of those guys wins that award. So well done. You deserve it. You know, and it was more of a culmination of the years of work put in rather than maybe just that one game. But yeah. I had put in, I had contributed throughout the season or throughout the years.
You tried MMA in the mid-2000s as the Wolverine. How'd you come up with the nickname?
Well, that was kind of given to me in Ottawa. I was growing out the chop. I had the chop. Oh, that's what happened. Brilsey was getting married.
Okay.
Chris Brilsey got married, and I was in the wedding party. And Christy, his wife, said no facial hair. And I'm like, okay, well, no facial hair. Well, now I'm going to grow chops. So I grew chops. I had the mutton chops, and then my hair was long, and I kind of resembled the Wolverine. And it, you know, there's kind of some physical attributes too. You know, I was always tough and scrappy, and you know, I'm not the biggest guy, right? But you know, I'll scrap with any of them, and that's kind of how I got the nickname. And so. When I was picking a name for my nickname for fighting, it was easy.
What did you like about that sport, and which sport is harder, that sport or football?
Well, they're completely different. You know, they're kind of apples and oranges, but I love them both. And so I got into MMA because I was doing things in the off season to keep in shape. Right. So, mm-hmm. Training in MMA and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and things like that and kickboxing, that was just a way to stay in shape. But the more I did it, the more I enjoyed it. And, you know, then I wanted to kind of do it for real, I guess you could say. It's like, it would be like in football, always practicing and never playing a game.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I wanted to do it for real. And you know what? I just turned 45 on Tuesday, and I honestly still think about doing it sometimes.
Do you?
It's just so much work, but I feel like doing it. I still feel like I could do it.
that's neat.
What's harder here, you know, I'll put it like this. There are a lot of athletes. There are a lot of guys that have kind of done something else and then transitioned to MMA and been able to do it or it's been able to stick. You know, you take some of those same guys, Brock Lesnar tried football. The Rock tried football, or, you know, football, I would have to say football is harder because it's so specific and you have to have such a specific skill set. Not only do you have to have all that athleticism, you have to have that awareness and things. You got to have the package, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to play at that professional level. So I would say probably football is harder only because some of those guys have tried to do football and haven't been able to do it.
Yeah. Okay. Lastly, Mike Maurer, if you had some advice for the young football player listening to this podcast, what would it be? Because you've got a very interesting story of perseverance.
That's when I coached, that was what I coached the most is, hey, you know what, whatever your talent level is, you got to have that heart and you got to have that toughness and you got to have that will. And if you have those things, like you're gonna be successful. Maybe it's not at football, but it's gonna be at something. But if you have that, you know, that determination and that will and that toughness to overcome adversity, you know what, you're gonna be successful.
And that's what I like about you, Mike, is that you gave back to the community. Until recently, you were coaching football with former Ram Chris Brilt, your old teammate. You guys were coaching minor football.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and you know, even though I didn't have my girls playing, they eventually played other stuff, and I, you know what, I coached them in flag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I coached Brilty and his boys, you know, over the course of several years, and we had some success. We were in the final a couple of times. I think we won it once or so,
mm-hmm.
and it was a good opportunity to kind of, yeah, like you said, give back and just try to imprint. And try to be a positive role model, you know, to these young guys coming up.
All right. Lastly, let's plug your business because, oddly enough, it's a Wolverine Tree Services. Tell me about it.
Yeah, that's I've been running that ever since I retired. Actually, I even started it kind of before I was fully retired. We do everything, you know, tree removal, tree trimming, stump grinding. It's been the busiest it's ever been this year. So that's been awesome. I got great people working with me. Dan Rastovich is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I got, because of the WestJet has kind of, and the whole travel thing has got, I actually got a couple of WestJet employees. So, you know what, we got a good crew, and we're enjoying doing it. You just caught me before I got into a tree, actually.
Oh, good. Well, I'll let you get back to it. But one more thing, because I talked to you about this in my backyard, and we only touched on it briefly. So one quick comment, because, you know, you had to grind and claw and scrape to get to where you were, probably both in business, but especially on the football field. Talk about the difference between the Americans and the Canadians, because a lot of people poo-poo our game. They're like, that's not real football. The NFL is real football. I've talked to a lot of people that tell me, you know, about 7 athletes are really elite on the NFL rosters. And then, you know, from 7 till the bottom of the roster, it's pretty equal CFL and NFL. Would you concur with that theory?
100%. 100%. There's that very, very elite that the NFL has, that kind of, I guess you could call it a tier.
Yeah.
You know, they're tier one, tier two, whatever. And then, yeah, those middle tiers, they're all, it's almost, what's the word, interchangeable between NFL and CFL. And then maybe our lower tiers are in the CFL or a little bit lower. They would be lower than the lower tiers in the NFL. But there's that whole middle there where a lot of guys could play either way. You know what? You know, and that's why I talk about perseverance and stuff, because sometimes it's just opportunities. You know, some guys just haven't had the opportunity, or maybe, you know, they just needed a second chance like I did. You know, so like I said, I saw lots of guys either go to the NFL and be successful, or guys that were successful in the NFL come here and maybe not even be very successful. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I picked their brain a little bit too in the locker room, and that's a lot what they say too.
Awesome, Mike. Thanks for this. Get in that tree now. Be safe.
All right. Thank you.
Well, as I tape this podcast, there's a Tuesday night NFL football game between the unbeaten Tennessee Titans at home against the unbeaten Buffalo Bills. This has happened before. In 2010, the Vikings and Eagles had to play Tuesday due to too much Sunday snow in Philly. But prior to that, you'd have to go all the way back to 1946 to find a Tuesday night football game. Well, that didn't stop us here at Growing the Game with Ballsy from making a Tuesday night theme song. Yeah, screw Carrie Underwood and Faith Hill and Hank Williams.
Well, it's Tuesday night, there's a whole new task, because the Tennessee Titans didn't wear their mask. Some of them got that COVID-19 and could have infected every other team. But they all got tested, they feel all right. So now they're playing football on a Tuesday night. Both teams are undefeated, Titans and Buffalo. Hold it. What's gonna rhyme with Buffalo?
He's coming in with some other lyrics.
These will work. Roll it. Both teams are undefeated, Titans and Buffalo. They're pumped up more than the Incredible Hulk played by Mark Ruffalo. So the schedule's all screwed up, let's hope they feel all right, so they can play football on a Tuesday night.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.